So I'm just kind of curious, in this patient's situation, what would you estimate his risk of relapse would be with ABVD or response-adapted ABVD?
Let me take that in two steps. The first would be ABVD. So if you calculate his risk, he had, I think, four adverse prognostic features on the IPS criteria. And based on that, his cure rate with ABVD alone would range between 65% to 75%. Conversely, if we look at risk-adapted strategies, these often incorporate PET scans. And historically, we've seen positive PET findings to have a very poor outcome in advanced stage patients. Interestingly, as time has gone on, and the ECHELON study was, I think, in part very important in understanding this, PET positive patients have done somewhat better than what had historically been reported. Originally, PET positivity was thought to predict an outcome of progression-free survival or relapse-free survival of less than 20% and many times less than 15%. But if you look, for example, in the PET positive patients in the ECHELON study and other studies, the outcomes with ABVD are closer to 40% to 50% progression-free survival. So PET positivity certainly predicts a worse outcome and should be considered, but whether it actually is as bad as originally thought is important to consider when making your calculation about how to proceed. That being said, patients who have PET positivity do worse certainly than those who have PET negativity, and there are now a few different studies that have looked at dose escalations to BEACOP in that population. I think it's important to note that dose-escalated BEACOP has not been widely accepted by community and even academic oncologists because of the toxicity profile associated with it, not only cytopenias, but also secondary malignancies and infertility. But in those studies, the important thing is they've been fairly consistent in improving the progression-free survival about 20% or into the 60% to 70% range, suggesting there is potentially a benefit in patients who are PET positive. I'm also cautious to say that not all PET positivity is the same. So you have some patients that have a great deal of residual disease, and then those with one or two lymph nodes. And biologically, I think it's important to consider that when you consider changing therapy based on a PET scan.
So we're doing a project. I don't know if you ever are familiar with Adjuvant Online, which was an online program in breast. I mean, it was also in colon and lung, but people knew it for breast. That probably familiar with the Adjuvant Online model that was done. You put in patient factors, it gives you risk of relapse, survival. Actually, it's not even up anymore. Our group, we're trying to do a project like that right now, and it really has us thinking a lot about numeracy. Okay? So you said this patient was in the medical field, so maybe even more able to understand data. If a patient like this, or maybe even this patient, said to you, "Look, I know it's just your best estimate, but could you tell me what you think is my baseline risk of relapse if I take traditional ABVD? What's my risk of relapse if I take response-adapted ABVD? Because as you said, maybe by capturing some of the PET positivity, it might even be a little better. And what's my chance of relapse under your hands if I take bevacizumab AVD? What numbers would you give to the patient?"
It's an interesting question. When you take a patient with advanced stage disease, in general, in the absence of risk factors, I would say his cure rate would be somewhere between 80% to 90%. However, with each additional risk factor, you lose a certain percentage, and at some point, it's not a linear curve. So I'm loath to say that each risk factor adds a certain percentage, but that is how the studies were done to look at this and suggest that roughly a 5% to 10% drop per risk factor, though I'd have to look at that actually, honestly, very carefully to make sure that I'm not misspeaking and what level that is. So there's also the notion that that has changed over time. Those risk factors were developed in the 90s in patient populations that were treated slightly differently than they are today.
I'm actually not asking you from the point of view of clinical science.
Okay.
I'm asking you as a clinician. In this breast cancer project, we're doing the same exact thing because the numbers for what we're asking are just not out there. There is no perfect data. But what we're saying to them is, what would you say to a patient? And that's what I'm saying to you. As somebody who had this clinical situation came to you today, same age, same situation, and they said, look, I know you don't know the perfect answer, but what's your best estimate? And of course, in Hodgkin, if you relapse, it doesn't mean you're not cured. But let's just talk about relapse, because that leads down a whole other path. If a patient with this situation said, what's my risk of relapse? What's your best estimate? What number would you give them for these three alternatives or range of numbers?
Right. So I would approximate for standard ABVD therapy a 70 to 75% risk of cure. That is to say, treatment-free, relapse-free survival moving forward. If you take this patient and just put them in the context of the study, that number came out to about 77%, which is a little bit higher than what I think we would have predicted. With AAVD, the only data we have is based on the study itself. And based on that, we would say the result would be somewhere between 80 to 85% in this setting. So a 5% benefit, roughly, for the addition of brentuximab, vedotin, and omission of bleomycin.
Okay, so what about response-adapted ABVD? And again, I know these numbers aren't perfect, but just what would you say to the patient?
So again, response-adapted requires knowing what the PET is. So I think the best way to tell you that is based on a negative PET or a positive PET. So if we have a PET scan that's negative, your cure rate increases to close to 90% with ABVD. With PET positivity, with ABVD, that number would go down to about 40 to 50%. And if one considered escalated BICOP, the data suggests that your progression-free survival would be in the 60 to 70% range.
Well, but I'm talking about at the beginning, before you know what the PET, the patient's going to, I guess you sort of could wait to provide those numbers after you see, but if the patient's trying to decide to go down the response-adapted ABVD approach, or BVAVD. So globally, do you think still with, I mean, again, we have no way of knowing because Echelon didn't look at this. Do you think you would see an advantage in progression-free survival or relapse-free survival? Would you give the same numbers to the patient? Or would you say, I think it's a little higher?
In the absence of knowing what the PET would show, the majority of patients will be PET negative. But that 70 to 75% number is what we would provide trying to calculate what the PET positivity rate would be and the PET negativity rate would be. So you try to do that in the original estimation of 70 to 75% with ABVD, assuming ABVD all along, because you don't plan on escalating to be a cop in the vast majority of patients. So I think it's difficult to do that without knowing if you're going to use risk-adapted therapy or not, because the majority of patients actually won't be treated that way in all comers. So I think that number, 70 to 75%, relates to this entire population. Now, if you're PET positive after two cycles, then you can look at the data based on escalation or de-escalation. On the other hand, if you're looking at risk-adapted therapy or AAVD, those numbers are from the beginning. If you look at after the PET scan, I think then you have a more precise delineation of those patients.